Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it was announced last week that Cook County Clerk David Orr would not be seeking re-election. Orr has served as a clerk since 1990. In that time, he's championed voter rights, including motor voter, early voting, and just recently a push for automatic voter registration. But his work in the Chicago area goes well beyond voting. He was also supported and passed several ordinances pertaining to human rights, same-sex marriages, and other issues surrounding the gay community. Part of that work started before he was clerk. In fact, David Orr's career began as an alderman back in 1979. That's 38 years of service. And, of course, David Orr has the distinction of serving as Chicago's 43rd mayor. He held the office for 7 days after the death of Harold Washington. Tonight, we talk with the outgoing Cook County clerk about his career in politics. David Orr, welcome to the Big Table. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Justin.
So, tell us. I mean, let's just start right there. What would the
Well, I have to tell you one
decision.
Thing first.
What's that?
One thing first is that I'm probably the only big city mayor that you will ever personally meet that never raised taxes in my entire term.
So, you tried.
Had
just
it been
record,
eight,
tried,
eight days, no. maybe. But yeah.
Why the decision to step down or not seek re-election for Cook County Clerk?
It's really personal in this sense that I like what I do. I believe in it. I kind of believe in the fight. This is a wonderful time to be taking on power, more or less, you know, federal, state, county, whatever. But here's the way I look at it, that I'm 72 years old. I've had a lot of fun. But the next term doesn't even start for a year and a half.
Right.
Okay, so you take the year and a half and then you add a four-year term. You know, so you're kind of committing to 5.5 years. And while I like it, there's a lot of other things I'd like to do. So it really boils down to, you know, I like lots of things, and I figured it's probably time that I just move on.
Is that a retirement, or do you say, I just don't want to be clerk anymore, you want to run for something else?
I think it's retirement. I'm enough of a politician that I'll just kind of intentionally leave that out there. Someone ticks me off enough.
You know,
I see myself as a kind of a progressive Democrat, but I get ticked off enough about things that I want to see things change, and I plan to stay active, but time to let somebody else take on the job and have some fun for myself.
Well, let's talk about, you know, specifically I want to talk about your career in politics, especially at the clerk's office. One of the issues that everybody in Chicago knows you for is the idea of voters' rights. I mean, we've talked a lot. We've talked with you on this program about early voting, about automatic voter registration. How far have we come as a society in the time that you've been in office as a clerk to being more transparent and giving people more opportunity at their right to vote?
Well, it's been good and bad. Now, speaking here particularly in Illinois, okay, because, you know, there's great variance among the states. In Illinois, we've moved Illinois now that we're considered one of the most open states when trying to make easy access to registration and easy access to voting. And everything we've done is based around certain premises that, you know, we should make it easy to vote. We vote on a work day. Well, only two major nations in the world that do that, you know, on a Tuesday.
Yeah, right.
Most everybody else votes on a weekend or a holiday. So because, you know, I really believe this. Now, some would say, well, he's just a Democrat, so he wants low-income people to vote. But what I believe is that the more people vote, the better, because we get a real, true, genuine feeling of where the country should be going. And so you don't want to make it, oh, well, you know, it's really hard for me. And so all the things over the last several years, whether it's like motor voter, where we had to sue the governor, yeah. Governor Edgar, back in the 80s, which allowed us to really find better ways to register people at driver's facilities. They were safe. They were cheap. It's worked very well, and probably close to 80% of all registrants are done
yeah.
that way. And then all these other things, the early voting, which has been a great success. We worked hard on that. And most of the things that we took to Springfield, it took us a few tries. Early
right.
voting didn't happen the first time.
Right.
The teen judge program didn't happen the first
You're
time.
You're seeing it now with the automatic voter right. registration.
Mail voting, yeah, same with automatic voter. So our view was this idea of a voter renaissance. Now, again, that's a lot of good stuff in Illinois. But we've also had the opposite in certain places, and that's voter suppression. And I don't blame all the voter suppression on Republicans. You do see a lot of Republican states pushing that. But in some ways, like the old machine. The old machine would be very clever. The old Democratic
yeah.
machine here in Chicago and Cook County, you know, they would try and suppress certain votes, too. So it's unfortunately, it's around too much, because the power in government, even though a lot of people don't realize it, they may not care.
Well, they think it doesn't exist,
power.
But there definitely
yeah.
is, right?
And the one who knows their power are the more powerful elements, because they understand that. You know, corporations know it, powerful law firms, and they should know it. So because of that, there is these attempts at voter suppression, and I talk about that a lot because I'm very concerned about it. I do believe our democracy is getting dangerously close to being in trouble.
Do we run the risk of puppeting back what we hear in the news or talking points from politicians when we hear about voter suppression? We hear a lot about voter fraud. We hear that we came out of this 2016 presidential election. Fraud is everywhere. You know, check this out. We need to do a lot with fraud. And then you get down to the nitty-gritty and you're like, well, there really aren't any cases of actual voter fraud. Do we run the risk of being manipulated by politicians who want to suppress the vote by talking about things that may not actually exist?
Well, absolutely. But let's put it in a kind of a constructive way. We run the risk of politicians misleading us on everything. Let's face it. As a politician, you want to be able to vote for the things that everybody loves and hide out from the things that nobody likes.
Right.
And good leaders in politics sometimes, so people say, well, what about Mike Madigan? Well, what a lot of people like about Mike Madigan, that might be a Democrat, is he wants to protect you. Exactly what Jim Durkin wants as a Republican side. So the point is, politicians don't want to have to vote for something that's terribly controversial. So the point is, we have to be skeptical, and we need to be educated, and we need to see through certain things. I was really young when I first discovered that I was listening to some state legislator, and they were telling me how much they were in favor of a particular thing. And then I found out later they weren't at all, but they could do that because they were going to vote yes because they knew the state Senate was going to kill it anyway. Again, I don't want to be overly cynical. This is just, it's education.
What happened to the bright-eyed David Orr that we knew so well, the former mayor? No, I'm joking.
Well, no, remember, I taught for a long time, so this wasn't a surprise to me. But it's important. It's not cynical. It's understanding people want to, in most cases, do the right thing. Certainly not all cases, particularly in some of Chicago's history. But the point is, we need to be looking for those things so we can be realistic about the assessment. I'll tell you something else, and let me go after both of the Democratic candidate, Mr. Pritzker, and the Republican candidate, Mr. Rauner. Nothing against either one of them. I don't think a democracy can function if billionaires can start spending money, because they have it, a year and a half before an election. It's not happened anywhere that I know of in any democracy in the world. It used to be there'd be a primary in March. People would be cool. The winners would go off, come back after Labor Day. So the problem with these continuous campaigns is largely the money. Mm-hmm. One, because other people can't. Could be some really good candidates, but they're not billionaires. Because we know the power of TV. And also that we have these long campaigns and people wonder what the heck is going on. And what do we do with those long campaigns? We have to raise enormous amounts of money. And how do we spend it? On usually nasty ads.
Let's take a break so we stay on time tonight, because I want to pick up on that, because I do think that we've seen politics change. I mean, we talk about it on the show all the time, just the idea that, yes, we are having big conversations about the gubernatorial race, you know, before even August, when it's supposed to kick off primary season, which is way too early to begin with. David Orr, my guest, the Cook County clerk, who has announced just last week that he is not seeking re-election. Sounds like a retirement, but we won't use that word. But David
okay.
Orr is my guest at the big table tonight. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, in studio, Cook County Clerk David Orr made big news last week saying he wouldn't seek re-election for Cook County Clerk. You know, we're talking about politics. You've been around the game now coming up on 40 years as a progressive Democrat. And what I enjoy about the conversation is that, you know, you can take a stark walk away look at the way that politics is progressing in this country, in this state, in this county. And it's not Republican, Democrat. It's just the idea that politics. And we talked about right before the break, just the idea that it just seems more and more that it is becoming a 24/7, 365 day process to elect any sort of official. It's amazing to me to be down to be talking about in Springfield that we're not going to pass a budget because it's going to have an impact on what happens in 2018. For you, coming up on 40 years in the business here, does that surprise you that we're at this stage?
I'm not sure surprised, because there's reasons for everything. And what I was saying earlier, whether it's voter suppression, whether it's misuse of money in politics, these things have been growing. There's been another key force on this, and that is you've got on one hand, you've got kind of a right-wing ideology that government's the enemy. Now, you've heard me criticize government, and we should, when government doesn't do the right thing. I can point to things every day out there that disappoint me. But I still believe in it, because government is the tool of democracy. So we've got the right-wing ideology that sometimes goes over the top there, and then we've got the old machine mentality. let's say in Chicago and Cook County, where they misuse government and people see it
right.
for corruption or advantages for some. Those things really hurt us. And what's happened now, 50 years ago, 70-some percent basically thought government did the right thing most of the time. According to Pew, more recently, it's like 19%. So, yes, we have a problem, and having people cynical and not participate helps some more than others. So
people in power,
this is not
right.
accidentally. The more powerful you are, the more you benefit from average people saying the heck with it. They're all crooks or jerks. And the fact is there's lots of great people, even in politics. Politics should be the art of managing conflict. It's not easy to do. And so, but these factors of money and the fact of people with enormous amount of money being in charge, like no offense again to Mayor Rahm or to Governor Rauner, but there's a fairly good possibility that neither would be in office if they didn't have all that money when they ran for office. So that's something to factor in.
Yeah.
We may not have some of the problems we have if you don't have this new phenomenon now where powerful politicians are raising millions on the side, the mayor, for example, or the governor, and to basically say, now my colleagues, either the Democrats in Chicago or the Republicans downstate, you vote the way I want.
Right.
Or I will crush
but,
you.
But that can't be new, right? Because well, Mayor Richard J. Daley
no,
used to run
no,
the Democratic
no, it's,
Party.
No, it's new in a sense of big money. Richard Daley had dictatorial powers in Chicago. He had other ways to do it. He could just say, you lose 50 jobs just like that, and you're gone. So we had an old patronage system that's
right.
not completely gone, but it's weaker than it was. And yes, there's always been influence, but this idea of being able to raise $20, $30 million and to say to a state legislator or an alderman, you better or else, it's gotten so much more crass. And so coming back to your main point is we need to find ways to break through that. And like you said before, here in Illinois, we have a governor, at least in my view, it's not that he doesn't care. You see all these things, all these social service agencies, millions of people being affected. But he argues that his, quote, agenda is so important he's worth doing it. And my problem is just that agenda is largely one that says to survive in the future, we have to lower people's salaries. That's the key to it. Bust unions. And when you do that, I mean, something nice. America grew when you had workers, mm-hmm. people that could move from, let's say, a lower working class into a middle class and afford to pay for their mortgage. Those are all wonderful things. But now a lot of people are worried, and I'm not calling them right or left. They're worried, and so the answer is, well, let's cut wages. So increasingly, the good jobs that might have been $35 now, they're fighting for $18, $17, and that has an enormous effect on our government.
Well, as you talk about, I mean, you mentioned the idea of a politician's job. I mean, at the core is to manage conflict. And there's so much conflict around, meaning, I mean, you think of all the things that circle around a city like Chicago and people with interests and their own agendas. And it's the mayor's job to make everybody, you know,
almost
talk to each other.
Almost an impossible job.
Almost an impossible job. But we see, in a way, a shift, and it seems to be a paradigm shift in the way that Governor Rauner has decided that that's not his job. He doesn't need to manage the conflict. There's conflict constantly. There's chaos and conflict with no compromise in sight. And Mike Madigan can't be let off the hook as well as another politician who has not managed conflict. What do you say to that? What do you say to the idea that we are seeing a stark difference and almost a move away from that concept that politicians' job is to manage conflict?
I always look for the causes of some of these things. And some of the causes are like old machine politics. In Mr. Rauner's case, it's ideology trumps common sense. But also you go back to the money. No offense to Bruce, but he wouldn't be there without that money. And some other Republican, we had some moderate Republicans, would have been compromising with Madigan just like Edgar did. And we'd have our problems, but we would not have this state. And if we didn't have the old machine and that iron control, we probably wouldn't have a Mike Madigan. And we might have a more, how can you put it, more flexible Democratic leader that was concerned about the whole Democratic Party and not just what you might call those powerful influences in Chicago
yeah.
and Cook.
So campaign finance and patronage seem to be this is the terrible marriage that has come together to rule the state of Illinois.
And we're trying to break away. There are some improvements. I was talking about this all through Mayor Daley, you know, the young Mayor Daley's term, when the media largely said that was all over, right? They talked to me in the 1990s, oh, Patch is dead. And I said, what are you talking about? And then the big scandal broke in 2003 or 4, and several of the mayor's top people went to jail for fixing the tests and so forth.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of easy to beat the game. So the Chicago and Cook County, Chicago's now out from under Shackman. Let's hope it's a good thing. It's hard to say yet. But as they're out from under that, these things don't work by laws alone. Democracies work, or, you know, think of a small town. Things work not because of a law, because people respect it, you know, general respect. The child who's a little bit off, people make fun of them, they still take care of the person. In the big city, you've got all this anonymity, and it takes different kind of solutions.
Yeah.
So part of the problem is, yes, we've had bad politics. The power of the machine just alone has caused enormous problems for Chicagoans today, because the major issue in my mind is still race. And if you look at society in a larger sense and you see what's happened with particularly African-Americans that come to policing, housing, schools, et cetera, it's an enormously serious problem. And the decades of machine rule, I think, aggravated that. So we're trying to break some of that stuff down. We've got some great leaders, which is really important. Okay, you see some really wonderful leaders, particularly like in the African-American community, not always at the elected official level, but I think people to the schools, even the teachers union, even Black Lives Matter, there's some of the union. There's a lot of really talented African-Americans. It gets harder when you move into politics because of the money.
Mm-hmm.
The money, and it's much easier for whites, for example, to raise money, white politicians like me, than it is for African-Americans to raise money. And so what does that mean? It means that they're more dependent upon certain lobbyists. No offense, again, I guess I'm offending a lot of people, but no offense to People's Gas and Commonwealth Edison and so forth, but it's much easier to win votes from those who can't raise much money. You go to any state legislator's political party, and they're all there. I'm just talking about the real
yeah.
world of politics and what we have to overcome.
Yeah.
So what we really want is simple, that the public votes, not as long as, you know, as long as it's a fair vote, their vote, and as long as minority rights are protected, the majority should be listened to. And that is being drowned out by the role of money and some of these yeah. other things I'm talking about.
David Orr, Cook County Clerk in studio. He just announced last week he will not be seeking re-election, retiring from politics after 39 years. When we come back, let's take a break for the news. When we come back, we have to talk about your term, your 7-day term as mayor of
okay.
Chicago. David Orr, my guest in studio tonight. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio tonight at the big table, Cook County Clerk David Orr. David Orr announced last week that he would not be seeking re-election. And it sounds like a retirement from public service. David Orr, long 38 years of service, including a stint. I say stint. A seven-day stint as the mayor of Chicago after Harold Washington died. Take us there. Take us to that moment. We know so much about that. We've had a good job of being able to understand that history. But from your vantage point, being in that position when a mayor dies and having to be in the middle of a political, I don't even know what you would call that, everyone just jockeying for position and for the seats. What was that? Tell us about that.
It was probably the wildest political time I've ever experienced. Let's set the scene. Most people didn't understand what was going on. First of all, I was Harold's vice mayor, and that was a new position. So earlier when the old man Daley died in 76, there was no secession policy, and a lot of black Chicagoans were upset because Wilson Frost didn't get to be mayor. They thought he was in line, and instead the 11th Ward pulled off Blandick.
Right.
And so part of the compromise at the time was to go to Springfield and create the vice mayor post. But and I it's probably Ed Burke, and I give Ed Burke for his cleverness, not a lot of other things, but for his cleverness. And the way it was written, though, was starting in the early 80s, there would be a vice mayor in case the mayor died or was incapacitated. But that mayor would only serve until the city council picked a replacement. So that was the key, which I knew, and the press was learning right away. So we had the tragedy, and for me it was highly personal because I admired Harold. We were close. I thought there was great things that were happening. I thought there was a good future for him and the city. And then, of course, you had this people, how did this guy die? Was he poisoned? Thousands and thousands believed there was
right.
something happened. And we had 30, 40,000 people in the street. So during that week, I was involved in a lot of honorary things. I remember, for example, you know, we had his body laid out in City Hall, and the crowds were so enormous, we had to chalk things on the sideway for blocks and blocks. And for several weeks after that, I would walk that and watch as the chalk would gradually disappear. And it took several weeks before all the chalk was gone. So part of it was honorary stuff, and then part of it was really hardball politics. Because before the mayor officially died, people were discussing, again, Ed Burke, he must have found out through his police buddies or whatever, exactly what was going on, so they knew how serious the condition was, and people started plotting. And again, nothing wrong with people plotting. At the time, I basically said, remember, I'm this little white guy in a city that had really had this respected black mayor, and so I thought it was very important that I be calm, that I have African-American leaders with me when I spoke as much as possible, talk about transition, and I promised I wouldn't pull any tricks. And people asked me whether I would be a candidate for mayor, and I said, I'm not going to consider any ideas like that before we've properly buried the mayor. So all the stuff went on, a lot of things that some have been written about, some haven't.
Yeah, right.
One of the most fascinating was is when it came down, you know, a lot of things happened that were changed. Several African Americans were originally going to go along with the Vidoliak, ironically, was gone by this time. But the 29, the white majority,
the block,
led largely by, you know, Ed Burke and Dick Mill and some others. And originally, several African Americans were going to work with them, and then they had pulled off because people in the streets, and became a real battle. And I know security came to me at that time before the big meeting was supposed to start on the Monday night after Harold died on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, because they're really concerned that among the thousands in the streets would be gangbangers in trouble. And so it was an attempt maybe to see if we could postpone that meeting. And that was a fascinating discussion because I was going back and forth and meeting with Eugene Sawyer, who became mayor, and Tim Evans, the floor leader that was hoping to be mayor. So a lot of fascinating things. It was entertaining given I was roundly, I don't want to say disliked, but that's probably true, by a majority of my colleagues on the other side. And so all of a sudden, I'm mayor, and I just got a kick out of some of the people seeking help at the time.
That's amazing history. I mean, it's Chicago history that, like you said, has been well documented, but there still has to be stories that have been untold. As you think about those days.
I got one.
You got one. That's where I was going.
I got one for you. I don't think this one's been told. People that know our little political history know on that famous night, which I call the world's longest political slumber party, when the meeting was supposed to start at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, didn't complete till 4 in the morning when Gene Sawyer was finally voted in. We all know that Dick Mill, the colorful Dick Mill, stood on the desk.
Of course.
Okay, and he stood on the desk and he basically shouted at me because I wasn't recognizing his side. And there was truth to that. And I made a very conscious decision because I knew, well, I felt certain laws were being broken, but I couldn't do much about it. But I knew if I called on one of the majority, they would move to close things down and there'd be no debate. And that's not a good way to do it. So I let the minority have their say. And then we moved ahead. But I don't think that's the real reason Dick Mell was standing on the table. And here's what you've got to remember, because Dick Mell was always ahead of the game. Okay, remember a guy named Blagojevich. What Dick Mell was thinking, okay, fine, they're going to elect a new mayor that night. But also, what did you have? You had David Orr as vice mayor. You had Larry Bloom. You had Tim Evans. You had all of us that had committees. Now, the lifeline to most aldermen and most politicians in Chicago is, we want those committees. That's where the jobs are. Some of them have 20, 30 jobs. So Dick Mell was really, in my view, on the table because he wanted to embarrass me and hoped that they could convince Gene Sawyer to kick us all out. Now, it did take Sawyer. This was, remember, November when he was elected. And I was the first one to go, but that was for several months. I don't know if it was February or March before the majority, in this case, Mel and the others were able to convince Sawyer, you know what, get rid of these guys. The same day I introduced an ordinance to restrict the way aldermen, they had these slush funds, and I had introduced an ordinance how that should be regulated. And the same day.
Very popular.
That's the day I got canned as vice mayor. And so then they brought in other people. And so gradually all of us were ousted. So there's a lot of things behind the scenes because, remember, politicians often, they're looking to what their interest is. I wish more of them were looking at how do we fix the schools and how do we fight crime successfully. But a lot of them look toward what's the particular advantage to them and how do they shape it weeks ahead of time, months ahead of time.
final question, and it really is just about, are you going to miss it? You were stepping down as clerk. You talk about these stories. I mean, it's been a part of your life for 40 years. I mean, are you going to miss being a public servant for Cook County and for the city of Chicago?
Well, I'm sure I'll miss some things, but I've when I left teaching in 1979, I didn't look back. When I left the city council in 1990, I didn't look back. So I'll miss certain things. But remember, I don't plan to go away. I'm not in a coffin or anything that at least I know of. So I plan to raise a lot of hell, even while I'm still clerk, and I'm going to continue to speak out. So answer your question is, I will miss some things. I'll probably miss the fact that the media won't care what I have to say. But the fact is, I will stay active. But, you know, there's a lot of fun things in life.
We care. We'll have you back.
Well, thank you.
You have to come back and tell more stories of your time. And also, you know, talk to us about what we should really be paying attention to when it comes to Cook County, state, even national, international politics. David Orr, the Cook County clerk who will not be seeking re-election in 2018, retiring from public service. Clerk Orr, thank you so much for being my guest tonight at the Big Table.
My pleasure.